It's a little window, high up at the ceiling. I can't see the sunset, but I can see the sky. It's blue and it's gray and it's white when the snow falls. Not like the room with no windows. You can watch the sunset every night, the mother said, from inside the house or from outside. Every night, Alice repeated. Overwhelmed at the idea, she turned, then jumped in shock when she faced a mirror. The woman wore a long skirt and a white blouse and pink shoes. Her hair, gray like an angry sky, was braided back from a pale face with scoring lines.
Who is that? Who is that? I don't know her.
You will. The mother put arms around Alice, around the woman. Do you want to rest now? I bet Rainy would bring you those cookies and some tea. Alice stumbled to the bed, dropped down to it. The bed felt so thick, so soft. She began to cry again.
It's soft. It's mine. It's pretty. I can keep the coat?
Yes.
See? You can cry when you're happy, too.
The mother sat beside her, then the grandmother on the other side. The sister sat on the floor. In that moment, for that moment at least, Alice felt safe. Though her feelings about bringing Alice home remained mixed and murky, Bodine put on a cheerful face as she walked into the kitchen. She found her mother and Miss Fancy at the counter, peeling potatoes. I expected to see Clementine. I sent her home. We decided to keep new or half-remembered faces to a minimum this first day. And the nurse is already up there with Alice and your Nana. How'd it go?
Better, I think, than anyone expected.
Miss Fancy set a peeled potato aside, picked up another.
She had some bad moments. And she'll have more, but by God, she had some good ones, too. We were right to bring her, Rainy.
We were. And Ma seems easier already. I think she'll get her first good night's sleep tonight. Clementine got a chicken in the roaster before she left. We're having it with mashed potatoes, gravy, your Grammy's candied carrots, and buttered broccoli. It's a meal Alice favored once, so I'll give you a hand.
No.
Setting down the peeler, Maureen wiped her hands on a dishcloth. I want you to come up and meet her. But we decided we'll hold off on the boys or having Sam go up. Keep it to women today. We're going to take a tray up to her room for dinner, ease her in there, too, but she should meet you.
Okay. You two go on. I'll get these potatoes peeled and on the boil.
They went up the back stairs. We all talked about keeping things calm and natural as possible. I know, Mom. I know this is hard on you, Bodine.
It's not.
It is. On you, on all of us. So I'm telling you like I'm going to tell everyone else. When you need a break from it, you take one.
What about you?
Your father's already made it clear I'll be taking one from time to time. She lowered her voice as they reached the second floor. The nurses are going to use the sitting room off Alice's bedroom when they're not in with her, and the bathroom across the hall we've designated for them and for Alice. Celia's coming about 11 tomorrow. Our house is going to be full of people for some time to come.
Mom.
Bodine drew her mother to a halt. Weren't we all there, all of us, when Grandpa got sick? Didn't we bring him back here from Bodine House and sit with him, read to him, do everything we could, even with the nurses, so he could die at home, at the home he'd chosen? Alice isn't dying, Bodine continued, but it's the same. We're just going to do everything we can to help her start living again.
I love you so much, my baby. I love you right back.
Now introduce me to your sister. They crocheted together, mother and daughter, in the two chairs Maureen had chosen, hoping for just that. Though Bodine had been prepared for Alice's appearance, if she didn't know the woman was a couple years her mother's junior, she'd have sworn Alice was 10 years older. Alice? Alice's head shot up at Maureen's voice. Her eyes glimmered with distress as she saw Bodine.
Is she a doctor? Is she a nurse? Is she police?
No. This is my daughter. This is your niece, Bodine.
Bodine. Alice Bodine. The mother says Alice Ann Bodine.
I named her Bodine to honor that part of us.
She has green eyes. You have green eyes.
Like my mother's and yours. Trying for casual, Bodine stepped closer.
I like your shoes. They're pink. They don't hurt my feet. I ruined my slippers and the socks, too. That was bad and wasteful.
Sometimes things just wear out. Is that a scarf you're making?
It's green.
Almost lovingly, Alice smoothed the length of the wool.
I like green.
Me too. I never could get the hang of crocheting. Lips pressed tight, Alice applied herself to it.
The sister has a daughter, she muttered to herself. I had daughters. The sister gets to keep the daughter. I don't keep the daughters. A man needs sons.
Bodine opened her mouth, saw her grandmother shake her head.
This is a pretty room. It's cheerful, this pink. Do you like it? It's not cold. I don't need a shawl. The bed is soft. It faces west for the sunset.
That's my favorite part of it. It's a beautiful sunset tonight. Confused, Alice looked over. Her crocheting fell out of her hands into her lap. A long, long gasp escaped as her face transformed. Cora plucked up the hook and yarn as Alice pushed to her feet. Outside the window, the sky seemed to fill the world. Mad, rich colors, undertones of gold etching billowing clouds, streaks of light shooting out of them and painting the white mountains.
Do you want to go outside to see it? Maureen asked her. Outside.
Wonder filled her voice, her face. Then she scanned down, rapidly shook her head.
People are outside. You can't talk to the people. If people see you, hear you, God will strike you down. Strike you down as they die. That's not true here.
Cora rose, joined her daughter.
But we'll watch from here tonight. It's beautiful, isn't it, Alice? Every night? Not once a week? Yes, every night. I think a God who gives us something so beautiful as that sunset is too loving, too kind, too wise to strike anyone down.
Whether she believed it or not, the words and the beauty soothed, and Alice rested her head on her mother's shoulder. In the shack, Callan washed up his dishes. He'd been waiting for a knock on his door, but since it hadn't come, he thought he might take himself over to the bunkhouse, seek the company of men, maybe sit down for a poker game. He didn't gamble often, or much, but since he didn't have his father's problem, he enjoyed the occasional game. One thing he knew. He didn't want to spend the evening in his own company. Too much thinking and worrying about what might be going on at the main house. Too much thinking and wishing for Bodine. Too much thinking about the things his mother had told him. Just too much thinking. So maybe a beer with the men. Few hands of cards, which might add some change to his pockets. He didn't have his father's problem, and generally, a lot better luck He'd talk to Bodine in the morning when they rode into work. He could settle for just talking until her life smoothed out some. Then the knock came. He stayed at the sink, annoyed with himself for the instant flash of pleasure. He'd be better off. He knew he'd be better off, not being so damned tied up in her. But he just couldn't cut the rope.
"It's open," he called out.
When she stepped in, the stress and fatigue on her face made him ashamed of the annoyance. "I really need to get away for a while."
"You've come to the right place. Want a beer?"
"No."
"Wine? I still have that bottle from the cabin."
She started to shake her head, then let out some air. "Yeah. Yeah, that'd be just fine. I haven't had my glass of wine tonight."
"Have a seat. I've got huckleberry shortcake, too."
"Where'd you get that?"
"Yolanda, dessert chef. I let her boy ride Sundown. He's been giving me the pleading eye after school every day for a week. I gave in, and I got huckleberry shortcake out of it."
"With whipped cream?"
"It ain't huckleberry shortcake without it."
"Good deal. I'm in for that." She tossed off her coat, sat. He took out his multi-tool for its corkscrew. It wasn't until he'd pulled the cork that he saw tears swimming in her eyes.
"Ah, hell.
I'm not going to cry. Don't worry. I may teeter on the edge of it for a couple minutes, but I won't fall off."
"Was it that bad?"
"Yes. No. I don't know. I don't know. That's the truth." Breathing, just breathing for a moment, she pressed her fingers to her eyes as if to shove back the tears. "She looks a decade older than my mother, soft and kind of doughy in the body, with a face that's lined deep, like a woman who lived hard. God, I hear how that sounds out loud. I'm not saying it to be judgmental."
"I know it."
He poured her wine, and though a beer would have suited him better, poured himself a glass of wine in solidarity. "Her hair's frizzed up and dry as straw, and has to be down to her ass, like it hasn't been conditioned or trimmed in years. And I guess it hasn't been. She's got spooked eyes. You see animals with eyes like that who expect the boot or the crop because they've felt it too often. Then she saw the sunset. Saw it through the window of that room I know you helped paint."
"I came in on the tail end."
"You helped paint," Bodine repeated, a tear slipping through after all. "And there was such joy on her face, Callan. Such wonder. Like a child's. She wouldn't go out because some of the men were still working outside, but she watched every minute of the sunset like it was fireworks on the 4th of July and Christmas morning and a circus parade all rolled out in one shiny package."
"Nobody does sunsets like Montana."
He set a plate of cake in front of her. "God, Yolanda knows her cake. You know, Sal and I, and a couple of other girls, went up to the Oregon coast the summer after graduation. They've got some impressive sunsets, but they don't beat Montana. Not for me. And for Alice? Callan, she said she was allowed to sit out for an hour once a week at sunset, if she was good."
"She's going to remember enough so they find him, Beau."
"She's remembering some. Some of the grannies and of Mom, maybe the house. She said she'd had daughters, but she didn't get to keep them like Mom could keep me. It ripped my heart." When her voice broke, she stuffed cake in her mouth. "Ripped it in pieces." Her breath tore. She bore down, made herself eat more cake. Callan said nothing, gave her the comfort of listening silence, so she could finish it out. We took up trays for her and Nana and the nurse. A good home meal on one of Mom's pretty plates with a cloth napkin.
You'd have thought we'd set a banquet in front of her. The rest of us, well, except Chase, ate downstairs. But all I could think was how she'd looked at a plate of chicken and potatoes like it was the finest French cuisine, and she didn't know quite what to do about it. She sighed, ate some cake. So I had to get away for a while.
I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but I think it's bound to get easier. I was hoping you'd come by.
She worked up a smile for him. Well, you did say you wanted sex.
I was hoping for that, too, but wine and cake aren't bad.
It's really good cake. Chase went over to Jessica's for dinner.
I heard.
He took his Tombstone DVD. Callan laughed. Pleased to see that laughter mirrored in her eyes.
A man can't help himself.
They might actually watch some of it. I'm pretty sure he's hoping to stay overnight. He brought her flowers today.
Callan just grunted, ate more cake.
He's in love with her.
Because he brought her flowers?
You tell me. I know you've been gone some years, but you know him as inside out as I do. So you tell me if you ever recall him bringing a woman, or a girl, back a ways, flowers. Callan drank some wine, thought it over.
He got Missy Crispin one of those.
He circled a finger over his wrist.
For the spring formal.
You've got to do that. This is midweek. Not even a date involved. Flowers. I saw them sticking out of his saddlebag. Irises, so he went out and bought them deliberately. Callan wagged his fork at her.
Has every man who brought you flowers been in love with you?
I'd sure as hell know he was seriously sweet on me if he bothered. And Chase has shy ways with women. Flowers, for him, are a statement of intent.
Intent of...
She won't know that, Bodine breezed on. But I know that. He's in love with her. And he's never been more than halfway sweet on anybody before. You know what else?
I might, but you're going to tell me anyway.
I can't say if she's in love with him. I haven't known her long enough to be sure of that. But I do know she's seriously sweet on him. It's not halfway sweet. She pushed the plate aside. God, I feel better. I think Rory was going out with Chelsea.
He in love, too?
No, but he's in substantial like and definite lust. I think that's absolutely mutual. Dad's going to make sure Mom gets some rest, and the grannies are better for being at the ranch right now. So, have you got a spare toothbrush?
No.
Oh. Well,
you want to brush your teeth?
Not right this minute, but I will in the morning. She polished off her wine, stood. I'd like to try your bed out.
It's not as big as the one we tried out before, but it's got good springs.
Well, let's give them a good bounce. Do you mind if I lock the front door? I'd just assume nobody wanders in while I'm naked on top of you.
Who says you'll be on top?
I guess we'll see.
Lock the door.
The springs held up just fine. And once they had, Bodine lay in a limp, sweaty daze. Oh, yeah, I do feel better.
Glad I could help. But I think it's time for you to feel a lot more than better.
He rolled back on top of her. The daze ran sugary enough that she tangled her fingers in his hair and just smiled. That would be a heroic recovery, Skinner.
Not really. Because we're going to do something we haven't managed before.
I can't think of anything we missed.
We missed taking our time.
He brushed his lips to hers, skimmed them over her jaw. The fast and furious works pretty well.
Let's see how we do with the slow and thorough. I like how you're put together, Bodine.
His fingers glided up and down the side of her right breast.
You've got long limbs. Long and pretty ripped with it.
I work out, she managed.
Firm, pretty breasts.
He brushed the nipple with his thumb.
All that hair. Straight as a ruler, dark as midnight. I like how it smells, so I always want to get a little closer. I like how you taste.
He took his mouth to her throat.
And those eyes. The color of leaves in the shadows. The way your skin feels under my hands. Just silk smooth. The way your mouth fits on mine.
He took his back to hers. Let the kiss spin on and on, soft and lazy as a spring shower.
I do like how you're put together.
You're going to turn my head. But she couldn't quite manage a laugh. Not when her head had started to spin, and those licks of heat ran under her skin.
The more I touch you, the more I want you. This time, you'll just have to tolerate it.
Her pulse beat under his lips, slow and thick, just as he wanted it. Her body stretched, undulating under his hands, then quivered, then softened.
He'd wanted her like this, wanted not just the excitement, the release, but all.
What would all with Bodine be? Sighs and sumptuous kisses, quiet moans and moonlight in a narrow bed. Response in an easy, unhurried rhythm. Pretty green eyes, heavy with what he could give her. He worked his way down her body. And this time, when she sighed his name. Her head no longer spun. Instead, it seemed she moved, they moved, through a warm, lovely mist where everything shimmered. His hands, hard, calloused, only made those lazy strokes all the more erotic. The stubble brushing over her skin as he ran his tongue down her belly made her quiver. Then his tongue slid down, slid over, slid in, and had her rolling, rolling, rolling slowly, dreamily, helplessly, over a velvet-covered peak. Still, he didn't rush. Still, those hard-palmed hands drew her down, further down into dazed pleasure, so the shimmering mists thickened. When his mouth took hers again, she'd already surrendered. He slipped into her, heard her breath catch, saw her eyes blur.
This part, too, he whispered, toying with her lips. Slow. Nice and slow.
Long, slow, deep, and her so hot, so wet around him. She broke again on a moan, but he held on, moving in her, drawing out every moment, every ounce of pleasure. Up again, slowly, relentlessly, until he felt her give, just one more time, and gave with her.
Chapter 21 Bodine overslept, something she never did. Maybe a half hour didn't rank high on the scale, but it put a dent in her rigid morning schedule. She hopped out of bed so fast, Callan missed his chance to catch her.
What's your hurry?
I'm running behind before I get started. I can cut back on my workout, prioritize emails. While she threw on her clothes, she calculated. Take the truck instead of Leo.
I can get Leo fed and saddled up for you. I was hoping to use him today.
She glanced back at the bed, at the shadowy outline of the man she'd slept with. That'll add to your own time.
Looks like I'm up anyway.
Not complaining, she thought. Amused, more resigned. Do you want to come over for breakfast?
I'd get better than a fried egg on toast.
Then I'll see you in an hour. She hesitated, then stepped back, leaned down, and kissed him. If I'd known this was going to happen, I'd have pushed you to get a bigger bed.
This one worked out all right.
I'll say it did. I have to go. She dashed out. Seconds later, he heard his door slam behind her.
The woman sure did move fast, he thought, dragging himself up to put the coffee on.
In under that hour, Bodine finished an abbreviated workout, grabbed a shower, dressed, answered a handful of emails. The rest could wait. Coffee just couldn't. Since she still ran 10 minutes behind, she'd sacrificed that first solo cup. Clementine would be in the kitchen by now. As expected, when she jogged down the back steps, coffee scented the air. Clementine had biscuit dough in a bowl and stood grating potatoes. It wasn't altogether unexpected to see Maureen chatting with Clementine and frying up bacon and sausage. But seeing Alice sitting at the kitchen table, head bent over her crocheting, put a hitch in Bodine's stride.
Running late for you.
Maureen laid sizzling bacon on a paper towel, sent her daughter a silent signal. Just a bit. Morning, Clem. Morning, Alice.
I'm making a scarf.
It's coming right along, too.
Like you, Alice is an early riser. Grammy's still sleeping, but Nana's getting a shower. I told Kathy, that's the night nurse, to take her time, and Alice could have her tea down here while we got breakfast going. Kathy is the nurse. She came to the hospital. Clementine makes biscuits. I like the biscuits.
Got some cayenne pepper in them, Clementine said easily. You always like when I put a little cayenne in them. Coffee's fresh.
Yeah. Bodine poured herself a mug.
Coffee's not allowed for childbearing women. It can stop the seed from planting.
I never heard that. Bodine leaned back, sipped.
That'd make it the easiest form of birth control ever.
Bodine, Maureen said under her breath.
Bodine kept the smile on her face, wandered over to sit with Alice. I don't think coffee's going to manage that, but I'm not ready for babies yet.
You're of childbearing age.
I am.
Bearing sons is a woman's duty to her husband. You should have a husband to provide for you.
I provide for me. I might like a husband one of these days, but he's going to have to meet my standards. They're pretty high, as I have my dad as my first yardstick. So that one of these days husband has to be handsome and strong and smart and kind and funny. He has to respect me for being who I am, the way Dad respects Mom. It's likely, given my personal bent, he's going to have to be a good horseman, too. And he's going to have to love me like I was a queen and a warrior and a genius and about the sexiest woman ever born.
The man chooses.
No, Alice. People choose each other.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Alice. Somebody took your choice away.
She caught movement. Saw the woman standing in the kitchen doorway. About her mother's age, with short, ash-blonde hair, a little stern around the mouth. The nurse, Bodine thought, worried she'd crossed some line. But the woman nodded. I think you're really brave. Bodine finished, watching Alice's eyes twitch as they seemed to do when she struggled to process.
Women are weak.
Some people are weak. You're not. I think you may be the bravest person I know. Alice ducked her head, hunched her shoulders, but Bodine caught the faintest smile.
I'm making a scarf. Clementine's making breakfast biscuits. The sister is...
She broke off, let out a muffled cry as Callan came in the mudroom door.
Shit, Bodine thought.
She should have run back and told Callan to hold off.
Morning.
Callan stood where he was.
I'm here to mooch breakfast. Are those your buttermilk biscuits, Clementine?
They are. Are your hands clean?
They will be.
You must be Miss Alice. He spoke easy, in a tone Bodine had heard him use with a nervous horse countless times.
It's nice to meet you, ma'am.
One of the sons. One of the sister's sons. An honorary one. Maureen's voice might have been a few shades overbright, but it stilled Alice's fretful hands. This is Callan. Cal's same as family. He's a good boy, Alice. Man, he's not a boy. Alice patted her cheeks. In response, Callan rubbed his own.
Didn't think to shave this morning. Slipped my mind. That's pretty work you're doing there. My sister does needlework. I wouldn't be surprised if she knitted up a house next.
You can't knit a house. I'm crocheting. I'm making a scarf.
If you want anything in this kitchen, you get over here and wash the horse off your hands, Clementine ordered as she cut out biscuits. This breakfast'll be ready soon.
Yes, ma'am.
She tells the man what to do, Alice whispered to Bodine.
She tells us all what to do.
I washed my hands.
Though her eyes went damp, Clementine nodded at Alice.
Then you'll get your breakfast.
At the clatter on the stairs, Alice jolted again. Bodine laid a hand over hers. Rory bounded in, cheerful as a puppy, hair still damp, face freshly shaved.
Overslept. Smells damn good in here. I could use...
He spotted the woman at the table with Bodine. Like the rest of the family, he'd been schooled. And Rory was, at the core, a salesman. He shot out a megawatt smile.
Good morning, Alice. I didn't have a chance to meet you yet. I'm Rory.
Alice's face went slack. Bodine heard the two rapid gasps before that face transformed into something beyond joy. Something too bright even for joy.
Rory! Rory!
Tears spilled, even as she laughed. And as she laughed, she pushed up from the table, flew at him, her arms wrapped around him.
My baby! My Rory!
Awkwardly, patting Alice's back, he stared at his mother in baffled shock.
This is my youngest, Alice, Maureen said carefully. This is my son, Rory. My Rory!
Alice eased back enough to look at his face, to stroke her hands over his cheeks.
Look how handsome! You were such a pretty baby, such a pretty boy. Now you're handsome. So big, so tall. Mom can't rock you anymore, my baby.
Alice,
the nurse spoke, tone even, matter of fact.
This is your sister's son. This is your nephew.
No. No.
Alice clutched at him again.
My baby. He's Rory. You can't take him away. I won't let anybody take him away again.
I'm not going anywhere,
Rory told her.
It's all right.
I prayed for my babies. For Cora and Fancy and Rory and Lily and Maureen and Sarah and for Benjamin, even though he went right to heaven. Do you know where they are, Rory? The other babies? My baby girls?
No. I'm sorry. Let's sit down, okay?
I'm making you a scarf. It's green. My Rory has green in his eyes.
It's nice. It's really nice.
And as Rory looked at his mother again, Bodine stood up. She moved to the back stairs to hug and hold Cora as she wept.
He was dog sick for a solid week. He could barely crawl out of bed to do his business, much less to down more medicine or open a can to eat. The fever burned. The chills racked, but the hacking, tearing cough was worse. It left him weak, breathless,
his chest fist tight, his throat raw from the thick yellow mucus that spewed from his lungs. He blamed Esther, cursed her as he lay on sweat-stained sheets. He'd track her down when he got back on his feet. He'd track her down and beat her bloody, choke the life out of her. She didn't rate a bullet. Even when he managed to stand for more than a few minutes, the cough could bring him to his knees. By the time he felt able to drag himself outside, he saw the dog was half dead, maybe more than half. He tossed some food in a bucket. Pumping water into another brought on a violent coughing fit. He spat out blood-tinged mucus, wheezed breathlessly as he took a look at the cow. Hadn't been milked in a couple days, he judged, and like the horse, had made do with snow and the spare grass under it. The chickens fared little better. It all showed him, clearly, bitterly, the boy had barely been around. And when he had, he'd done his work halfway. Boy was useless, just like his cursed mother. When he got his strength back, he'd take that boy to task good and proper, and he'd go out, get a young wife, get a young one who'd bring forth sons who'd honor their father, instead of one who came and went as he damn well pleased. Made a mistake with Esther, and he could admit it. Wasted too many years on her. Made a mistake or two trying to take on a second wife, but he wouldn't make another. He just had to get his strength back. Even enough to get himself some medicine, some supplies. Dizzy from the effort of tending to the animals, he stumbled back inside. He wanted to check the internet, gain some solace from the words of men who knew what he knew, believed as he believed. He'd paid good money for the Wi-Fi antenna, for the hotspot devices and repeaters, and he'd learned how to use them and stay off the grid. Goddamn government. Spying on everybody, stealing land, shoving their gays and blacks and Mexicans down the throats of real Americans. He was a sovereign citizen, he thought, a man prepared, even eager, to shed blood to protect his rights. He'd shed Esther's, he thought. He'd thrash some respect into the whelp she'd foisted on him, and he'd find a wife who'd give him the sons he deserved. But all he could do was crawl back in bed, shiver with chills, wheezing out breath from lungs thick with fluid. Callan's gut knotted when he saw Sheriff Tate pull up.
"Let me know if you need anything," he said to the farrier, walking over to meet Tate. "Has there been another one?" "No. No, that's one blessing. Got a little May weather in March. It'll turn on us, but I'll take it."
Tate scanned the paddocks, the shelter.
"You on your own?"
"We got 2 trail rides out, another 2 this afternoon, and a pair of lessons down at the center. May weather means May bookings."
Tate nodded.
"Is that Spike over there?"
"Yeah.
Hell of a name for a farrier." "You don't often see a farrier wearing a spiked dog collar and sporting 6 tattoos, but he knows his work. Can you take a break?"
"It appears I'm already taking one."
"Let's walk over this way."
Tate aimed for the big paddock.
"Some fine-looking horses.
We brought more in today. We're going to take them out to pasture tomorrow if this weather holds like it's supposed to. It's been some time since I herded horses to pasture at dawn, rounded them back up for the night."
"It sounds like you're looking forward to it."
"I guess I am. I like the work here, even though there's a lot of computer and paper involved."
He reached out, rubbed a curious bay down the nose.
"I know you didn't ride over here to see how I was taking to the job."
"No. I'm heading over to the Bodine Ranch to talk to Alice. She'd be having her talk with the psychiatrist now. I'm going to hope she remembers a little more."
"I can tell you she's had more to say. I heard her myself when I went over at breakfast. She thought Rory was hers. She named off 7 children. All girls, but for one named Rory and another. The way she put that one, he either died in the birthing or right after.
Oh, my Christ.
I don't figure I'm telling you anything I shouldn't when I say she latched onto Rory. She talked about how she'd rock him, sing to him, play peekaboo, how he'd learned to walk on his own. It about broke your heart. Have you got anything on this son of a bitch, Sheriff?
I wish I could say we did.
We're working with the Stadies. We put up her picture, gave it to the media, in case anybody'd seen her. We had dogs out, trying to pick up her trail, but with the rain, and not having a damn clue how far she'd walked up or down the road before she collapsed, we don't have so much as a starting point. You need her to tell you, and you can't push at her. You're right, on both counts.
When the curious bay nudged at his shoulder, Tate gave him an absent pat.
But any little thing she can say is one more thing to work with. But that's not why I came by. I heard Garrett came out here in an official vehicle, wearing his official uniform, and went at you again. Clintock doesn't worry me. I suspended him.
Callan turned now, shoved at his hat.
There's no cause for you to do that on my account. I didn't do it on your account.
Temper ruddied Tate's cheeks.
He disobeyed a direct order. He harassed and threatened a private citizen. I suspended him rather than firing his arrogant ass, as he's got some good qualities under the bullshit, and I've got 2 manhunts on my hands. I got 2 women dead and a cold trail on whoever killed them. I got a man who kept a woman I have a fondness for locked up we don't know how many years. And right now that trail's cold, too. But if Garrett crosses the line again, he loses his job. And that's for me to say.
Tate tapped a finger on Callan's chest.
Are you in charge around here?
I guess I am.
Would you tolerate one of the people out leading a trail ride, giving a lesson, tending the stock, doing the opposite of what you told them? Getting up in the face of one of the guests here? Disrespecting your authority?
Wedged firmly in a corner, Callan heaved out a sigh.
All right. You made the point. And my next is this. He's as pissed off as it gets. If he comes at you, Cal, I hear about it. I don't want any bullshit from you here about handling him fine, about him not worrying you. He's one of mine, and if he comes at you again, I need to hear about it. I can't have a man who'd do that, holding a badge and a weapon and working under me. You got that clear? Yeah. Yeah. I do. You don't have to like it.
Well, I don't.
But I understand it. Your word on it.
Tate held out a hand.
Hell.
Boxed in yet again, Callan shook hands.
My word on it. Then we're good. I'm going to go talk to Alice.
But Tate stared out at the horses another moment.
7 children.
She named them off.
She named them. Merciful God.
Tate muttered and walked away. When he pulled up to the ranch house, he hoped he'd timed it well. He recognized Dr. Minow's car, so that was good. He wanted to hear what she had to say, too. When he knocked, Cora came to the door.
I hope I'm not intruding, Mrs. Bodine.
Of course not. You went with Cora at the hospital, Bob. You stay with Cora. Alice is talking with the doctor, with Dr. Minow. I think they should be almost done. You come right in. He took off his hat as he stepped in.
How's Alice doing, ma'am, since you brought her home?
I really think better. I do. Ma, look who's here.
Why, Bobby Tate.
Setting aside some knitting, Miss Fancy patted the cushion on the couch beside her.
You come sit down and give me all the local news and gossip.
I wish I could, Miss Fancy.
Well, I'm going to get you a cup of coffee.
Please, don't trouble, Miss Fancy.
The day I can't get a cup of coffee for a good-looking man when he comes calling is the day I meet my maker.
The shirt she wore said, "Women belong in the House and the Senate." Miss Fancy believed both statements with equal fervor.
"You're going to have to wait a few minutes anyway," she added. "Alice is talking to the head doctor upstairs. You sit down, and I'll get that coffee."
"We're looking for things to do," Cora said when her mother left the room, "trying to keep busy. I guess you'd have told me right off if you had anything to tell me."
"I'm sorry, Mrs. Bodine. Cora, we're doing everything we can."
"I don't doubt it."
"Oh, Dr. Minow, you're finished? We had a good talk."
"Sheriff?"
"Dr. Minow, is she up for more talking?"
"Give her a few minutes. She's doing very well, Mrs. Bodine. I think your instincts, Maureen's instincts, about bringing her here were right. It's just the start, but she's calm."
"Can you tell me if she remembers anything about her abductor? Her captivity?"
"She avoids it, and that's natural, Sheriff. She's struggling with what he indoctrinated in her, and this reality. This reality she remembers in some part of her mind, and this reality is where she feels safer, even happier. She did talk about the House. And when I asked her if it was bigger than her bedroom, the one upstairs, she said it was about the same, but now she has windows and pretty walls." Celia turned another smile to Cora. "Painting it the way it had been makes her feel comfortable, gives her a sense of ownership, though she doesn't recognize it as such." And now Celia turned toward Tate. "Her captor didn't live in the House with her. I'd say it was more the size of a shed than a house. She wasn't ready to talk about what she could see when she went outside. She mentioned a dog, a mean one, but she closed off on any other details."
"An outbuilding and a dog's more than I had."
"Here you go, Bob." "Oh, Dr. Minow."
Miss Fancy carried the coffee to Tate.
"Can I get you some coffee?"
"Thanks, but I have to get back. I'll be here the same time tomorrow. For now, don't push her about Rory. We'll give her some time there."
"I'll get your coat. Walk you out."
Tate stood with his hat in one hand, the coffee in the other.
"Miss Fancy, I'm going to go up and see her, if that's all right."
"The nurse up there is..."
Miss Fancy rubbed her temple.
"Hell! Her name slipped my mind."
"Don't worry about that. I'll see you before I go."
He assumed they'd use her old room and knew where to find it. For a few months, long ago, he'd pined outside her bedroom window, and sometimes she'd climb out of it to meet him. Now, with the years between sitting heavy on her, she sat by the window, working yarn with a hook. The woman in the second chair read a book, but rose when he came in.
"You have company, Alice."
Alice looked up and smiled shyly.
"I know you. You came to the hospital. You were very nice, and came to visit me. You..."
Her eyes twitched.
"You can walk on your hands."
"I could once."
His heart knocked a little as he remembered making her laugh when he'd walked over the grass on his hands. They'd been 16, he thought, and he'd been wildly in love with her.
"Not so sure I could do it now."
"I'll leave you to talk. I'm in the next room," the nurse told Tate quietly.
"You're drinking coffee." "I'm not supposed to drink coffee, but Bodine does. She's the sister's daughter. She's nice, too."
"I know Bodine. She's a fine young woman. Can I sit with you?"
"The man doesn't have to ask. The man does."
"A polite man asks."
Could I sit with you, Alice?
She actually flushed a little.
You can sit. I'm making a scarf. It's for Rory. It's for my son. He has green eyes. He's so handsome. He grew so tall.
How long's it been since you've seen him?
We had breakfast. Clementine made biscuits. I like her biscuits.
I mean, before breakfast.
How long since you'd seen him?
Oh,
he was just a year old. Just 1 year. Such a sweet baby. I could keep him and nurse him and bathe him and teach him to clap his hands. I taught him to walk and say Mama, because he's the son.
You had daughters.
Baby girls. Cora and Fancy and Lily and Maureen and Sarah.
Did you teach them to clap their hands?
I couldn't. Sir had to take them. He has no use for girls, and they can fetch a good price. Maybe you can find them.
I can try.
But not Benjamin. God took him to heaven before he came out of me. And not Rory. I found Rory right here. I'm happy I came here.
Did you have children in your house? I mean to say, were they born in your house?
Only Lily and Maureen and Sarah and Benjamin. Sir provided the house because I gave him a son, as a woman is meant to do.
Where did you have Cora and Fancy and Rory?
In the room downstairs. Her lips pressed together. I didn't like the room downstairs. I didn't like it. I liked the house better.
It's all right.
He touched her trembling hand.
You won't ever go back to that room.
I can stay here with Rory. With the mother and the sister and Grammy. Grammy. Grandpa has M&Ms. He smells like cherries and he has a beard.
That's right.
It occurred to Tate she wouldn't know her grandfather had died, so he trod carefully.
Does Sir have a beard?
All over. All over. She rubbed a hand over her cheeks and chin.
Does he smell like cherries?
No. No. Like the soap that stings at first. And sometimes not. Sometimes like whiskey. Sometimes like whiskey and sweat. I don't like it. I like making the scarf. I like making the scarf. I like making it, and the window, and the biscuits. I like the pink walls.
They sure are happy walls. What color were the walls in your house?
Gray, with white spots and lines. I like these better. I'm ungrateful. I'm ungrateful for what Sir provided.
No, you're not. You're grateful to be home with your family. Can you tell me something, Alice?
I don't know.
Can you tell me where you were when you met Sir, the very first time?
I don't know. I have to finish the scarf. Finish it for Rory.
That's all right. I have to go now, but I'll come back if that's all right.
It's all right. I wanted to come home, she said as he rose.
You're home now.
I should have called Grandpa from Missoula when I got there. He'd have come to get me. He wouldn't be mad.
You were coming home from Missoula?
From otherwhere. I don't know. I'm awfully tired now.
I'll get the nurse for you. You can rest a while.
They roast turkey for Thanksgiving, but I like Grammy's ham better.
Grammy makes ham for Thanksgiving, and we all make pies. I'm going to sleep.
All right, Alice. Here, I'll help you.
He helped her to the bed, tucked a throw around her. It's soft. Everything is soft here. Is the mother here?
I'll go get her for you. You rest.
He went out, signaled to the nurse before he started down for Cora. An outbuilding. A dog. Somewhere on the road from Missoula to the ranch. Sometime around Thanksgiving. Though God knew how long ago. It was more than he'd had. Chapter 22. Time moved. While most of home life centered around Alice, what to say, what not to say, what to do, what not to do, spring glided in with all its sweetness and all its demands. The sun came earlier, stayed later, and those daylight hours increased the work. Bodine often thought of that work as an escape from the stress and worry of the eggshell walking required at home, then felt guilty for thinking it. She thought of the nights she spent with Callan in his narrow bed or at an empty cabin as another kind of escape, and didn't feel the slightest twinge of guilt. If she analyzed it, as she sometimes did, she concluded he gave her balance, companionship, a good ear for listening, a steadier hand than she'd ever given him credit for, and really good sex. She liked to think she gave him just the same. Most days she saddled up and rode to work with him, then home again. If she could juggle the time, she rode home again midday to give her grannies a little break from Alice. I like her. Though she had an agenda in mind, Bodine rode easily beside Callan. Every once in a while, someone peeks out from the trauma. And I know I'd like that someone. And the dogs like her, which is a good gauge.
The dogs like Alice.
And it's mutual. A lot of the time they sprawl and snore at her feet when she crochets. The sheriff came by while I was there this afternoon. He's got a good way with her, too.
Did he get anything more?
It came out she was 21. Just turned 21 when she started hitchhiking home. So that gives him a closer when. I don't know what he can do to close up 26 years and find something, but I could see it mattered knowing. She wanted me to stay while he talked to her. She was happy, starting out, like we were all having a little visit. She's making another scarf, for me. She finished Rory's. Lifting her face to the sky, Bodine shook her head.
I'm all over the place. Not so much. She likes you, trusts you. She likes Tate. She's shy with me if I'm around, but I don't scare her.
It's the same with Dad and Chase, the shy but not scared. And still, she won't step outside. People are outside, and that's that.
She needs more time.
I know, and it hasn't been much time yet, but we all have to be so careful. And it wears, Callan. It's helping, but it wears. Some days, she knows Rory's not her son. Others, she digs in there like a mama bear. It's hard on Rory. He's dealing better than anyone could expect. You forget to give him credit sometimes for his heart. He has such a good heart.
You want to know what I think?
I'm blabbering about it again, so I must.
You've always been tight. God, I admired and envied that all my life. Your family pulls together, and this situation made you pull harder. I figure Alice is peeking out from what that fucker made her because she's got that in her. I know what it's like to be 18 and pissed at the world. More than you, he added.
I've been pretty lucky in my world.
It's more than luck, but yeah. I know what it's like to want to come home. To need to. Nobody stopped me from doing that. Nobody stopped